Welcome to the Advanced Relationship Podcast. We are your hosts, Bryce Bauer
and Jenny Morrow.
We are a married couple devoted to helping you advance your relationships.
With over 14 years experience as a marriage and family therapist and relationship coach,
and over a decade of experience as a certified life and relationship coach,
we are here to help you create the most intimate, loving, and powerful relationships on the planet.
All right, welcome back to the Advanced Relationship Podcast. I have a special guest today, Keely Rankin. Welcome, Keely.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
Yeah, and we were just talking, we met on a retreat in Mexico like 4 years ago. Is that's the last time we spoke, is that right?
It's about the last time we spoke, yeah. We had a fantastic retreat down there, a yoga retreat. It was great.
Yeah, you guys were doing a yoga meditation retreat, and then Jenny and I were just there, and we just kind of merged with your group.
It was fantastic, yeah.
Like a free retreat out of that. That was super fun. Yeah, cool. So I'm excited to meet with you today. You are a sex therapist, and correct. I'm curious to know, how did you become a sex therapist? What had to happen in your life to lead you down this path?
Yeah. You know, I'm sure you're not surprised. That's kind of the most common question that I get. People always want to know. They're like, this is unique. How'd you end up here? And it's a little complicated, but I'll make it somewhat brief. But, okay. You know, I rode horses growing up. I was a competitive horse rider and I was quite good. And so I was always around people that were much older than me. Just constantly surrounded by older women. And they often talked a lot about sex. And so it got really normalized for me. Blowjobs, you know, birth control. So when all my peers started going through puberty and starting to talk about sex, I just happened to be the person that had the most information. Mm-hmm. And so people would just come to me and ask me about birth control and ask me about blowjobs and ask about things. And so I was sort of like the person that just set, you know, everyone straight around like what was what. And as sort of time went on, I realized not only was it really easy and I felt really comfortable talking about sex, but it was also really interesting to me. Like, I'm just fascinated by these different ideas around lust and long-term monogamy and partnerships. And of course, you see as a child, you know, you start to see people's parents' relationships rupturing and you know, it always seems like sex was somewhere in there. This question of sex, even though, of course, parents try and hide it from their kids. Like, you kind of know, you kind of have a sense.
Yeah. Was your family open about sex?
Did that contribute
at all? No.
They are not. No, they're not open about sex. And when I came out as like, I'm going to be a sex therapist, my parents were in complete denial for a couple of years. And now they love it. They love to kind of shock and awe their friends and say, this is what my daughter does. But, you know, it was never super secretive. Didn't grow up in like a very religious household, but it wasn't out in the open by any means or something that was discussed freely. So I feel like I have a pretty similar history to a lot of folks, just kind of like this, you know, tight-lipped thing. But as I continued my journey with horses and eventually decided I didn't want to ride professionally, came back home, was trying to figure out what my second career was going to be. And the only thing I could stay awake to was reading was books about sex. And so I decided, okay, like, I guess this is where my passion's at. And I read through a woman's book. Her name is Sheer Height. She actually just passed away. I think it was September 11th or 12th. And she'd just written this incredible book about the study of male sexuality. And I loved it. I just was fascinated.
Yeah, what's it called?
It's Sheer Height. I believe it's called Sheer Height Study of Male Sexuality. That was the one I read. She's most well known for her study on female sexuality. I have not read that one. They're like dictionaries. I was actually traveling through Thailand reading this book and would get on these buses and reading them out loud to everybody. I was fascinated by the topic. And so decided that I wanted to work in sexuality, but didn't know what I wanted to do. And eventually sort of tried my hand in a couple different areas, and working with clients just really fit. I felt really connected to people. It was easy. It was fun. And so went back, got my master's, did a bunch of different specialty trainings, and here I am now 10 years later.
Awesome. Yeah. And because I was wondering, you went through a master's program, but was there a sex specific training that you did?
So at the time that I was doing my master's program, I believe there was one specialty training in the country. And I want to say that was at Penn State, but I could be wrong. So no, it wasn't. It's just a traditional MFT program. Actually, it wasn't a traditional MFT program. I did a holistic program. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit of a hippie at heart. So got the traditional information and an extra year of non-traditional master's education information. So, and then did all the specialty training sort of secondary through other avenues.
Cool. Cool. And what about you and your personal life? Who are you? Married, with kids? Where do you live? All that.
I just got married. I am a COVID marriage. My husband and I were supposed to be married. Man. Yeah, it was wild. We were supposed to be married in April in Paris. And of course that got canceled. And then we just decided to go ahead with the wedding, got married anyway. It was beautiful, hilltop of San Francisco. I'm in San Francisco. So, five people, a friend as our photographer, you know, it was really, really lovely and really, really meaningful. And we don't have any children, but we do have two rescue dogs. So that's the newest excitement in our lives is fostering these or helping these two little monsters become friendly and a little more socialized.
Cool. So I'm curious, what do people come to you for? What do you see most when people are searching you out?
Yeah. So originally when I started working, I felt a little overwhelmed by the complexity of sexual issues because, you know, really sex is a huge topic. We say sex and people think of, you know, one thing, penetration, intercourse, but the amount of places that our eroticism, our sexuality, pleasure, you know, these more intimate, you know, physical intimacy, emotional intimacy, the places that these touch, it always kind of felt in the beginning of my journey to help people pretty big. So I actually started to specialize in male performance issues. And so most of the clients that I was working with were men who were struggling with performance issues, which was great because I got a huge array of people to work with, actually created an online course for men who struggle with early ejaculation and, you know, did a bunch in that area. And as I got more comfortable, I started to branch out and mainly am working with clients around pleasure. So people who feel disconnected from their eroticism, they feel like there's more and they just don't have access to it or they're afraid of it or, you know, various reasons why people disconnect from their bodies, but essentially really helping people figure out like what is their pleasure, what turns them on, how can they be in a relationship in a I think of it as like a healthy, balanced, erotic way.
Okay. Yeah. So you've mostly worked with men, is that right? And with sexual dysfunction?
Yeah. I'd say the first 5 years of my practice was 80% men. And now I'd say it's 80% men struggling with performance issues. Now I would say I have maybe probably about 20% of my clients are male performance people. But now I work with couples, with women. And that's actually been a really great change. It's hard to say if because my field of focus and comfort and skill transitioned that I started to work with more women, but I think also a lot more women are sort of saying like, hey, I want pleasure in my life. I don't want this to feel like something outside of me or something I'm never going to get to experience. And so I've really been getting a lot of women showing up in my office just saying like, help me. Like I didn't get any education as a kid. I don't know where to turn. My friends won't talk to me, I don't feel comfortable talking to my friends about this or they won't talk to me about this. So that's been a really, really wonderful thing to see shift in the last couple of years. And, I've talked to some of my colleagues about it too, and they said they feel like some stuff is shifting just socially around women feeling more entitled to their pleasure, which makes them reach out for help.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, what came to mind, as you said, that was like the Me Too movement and just everything happening in the world of women.
Totally.
And I can tell I feel ignorant here and I'm excited to learn from you here. And I feel nervous. I'm like, this is an area that I don't spend a ton of time talking about, at least openly, like on a podcast like this. Mm-hmm. So Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here and to talk to people, because I think it is this subject that's so important. And a lot of people are thinking about it all the time, but they don't really know where to turn or who to talk to. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of my colleagues are really well educated in therapy and psychotherapy and different modalities and dynamics, but they themselves actually aren't comfortable about talking about sex. So a lot of times I'll get referrals from my colleagues who do more sort of traditional therapy, and they'll say, like, oh, I have this client, they need to, you know, I think they need to look at some of the pieces around their eroticism, like, you know, can you take them? So you're not alone in the discomfort.
Okay, cool. Good to know. So I want to start with a broader question. We have several questions coming in from our Facebook group and our listeners. So the bigger question I have, and just however you understand this, where do most couples get stuck in the bedroom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first off, that's a very, this is, you know, one of the reasons I chose to specialize in male performance issues, because this is a very complex topic. And I think what happens is that people try and, I will answer the question, but I think people try and sort of like diagnose or put one reason on why, you know, their sex life isn't going the way they want it to. And it's really complex, and our sexuality is ever evolving. And I think, in my opinion, I think that of evolution is really super important, because it allows for things always to be new and exciting and from a place of creativity and inspiration, versus a like rigid set of like, this is what you do first and second and third. It's more of this curiosity and creativity. And so I think it's, without knowing the specifics of what's happening in a couple, it's really difficult to say, sort of like point to one thing. But that being said, a model that I created is called the Balanced Human Sexuality Model. And I'm always sort of applying it when I'm working with people, just because in my own head, I really like to be able to categorize things. Okay. And the model is, imagine a circle, and it's broken up into three parts through the middle. So kind of like a peace sign.
Yeah.
And one side, one section, one third of it is relationships, intimacy, love, and connection. I think of that as like the heart center of eroticism. And it's also, you know, Hollywood movies and religion, this sort of like this idea of you just love someone, you'll want to have sex with them all the time. Uh-huh. And the truth is that's not enough. That's not enough to keep someone's romantic sexual world sort of moving in an exciting, you know, inspired way. There's these two other sections. And one of the other sections is called erotic embodiment or sensations. So that's sort of, how do you experience touch? How do you take in, receive, give, what's happening with your skin and your breath, you know, all of these different pieces, sort of how are you in your body and letting your body experience pleasure. And then the other section is what I call creativity, anticipation, or fantasy. So that's sort of, how are you letting your brain come online and explore, you know, whether that looks like, you know, sometimes when people hear the word fantasy, they think of like dress up or, you know, playing in these certain roles. And it can be that, but it's more about the building of anticipation. And I think a lot of times what can happen, or one of the most common things that can happen, is that couples end up really stuck in this love category and really stuck in this like, well, we're really connected. We really love each other. And that's why we want to make love all the time. And while that's a beautiful thing, if it gets overused and the other two sections don't have any energy in them or any attention turned towards them, I think people can start to feel pretty just, the reason I call it Balanced Human Sexuality is the Balanced Human Sexuality Model, is because I think people just start to feel imbalanced and they just don't want to turn their attention towards eroticism because it just doesn't feel like everything's, you know, kind of fitting into place or feeling good.
Yeah. Wow. And I'm just feeling blown away by this model and just the language around it. You know, it's like, it makes a ton of sense to me, because I've known that love, that's not all it is. That's not what creates desire and interest. And so the three categories I'm seeing are love, erotic embodiment, and fantasy. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
Okay. And the whole model is called Say
balanced human sexuality model.
Wow. Super cool.
Yeah. And I do have plans with a colleague to actually build out a course based on that whole model so that people could come and sort of self-diagnose within their couple. Or you can, it's actually this is couple related, but it's also individually based. Like there's two ways in which humans are sexual: in solo practice, so by themselves, you know, or in partnership. And so this model actually applies to like what's actually happening in your own solo world too. You know, are you, you know, really actually making love to yourself when you're self-pleasuring? Are you connected to your sensations? Are you just tuned out watching porn? You know, are you letting yourself connect to the anticipation and the fantasies? Can you actually creatively make up and follow a movie, what I call a movie in your own head that turns you on? And that's always a really interesting question for people. And normally when I work with couples, we actually start with each person's individual relationship to the model and then look at the couple.
Wow. Interesting. So, and what I was hearing you say maybe is that some couples get stuck on they're only thinking about sexuality through love, and they're not really tapped into what are their fantasies, their body. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. Okay. Like, you know, we live in a world where we are not really taught how to be in our bodies at all. Mm-hmm. Like we just, you know, especially now, I think we're becoming more and more glued to our screens and we're not necessarily connected with actually feeling our sensations. We're just quickly moving through things and we're constantly being bombarded by lights and noises and sounds, you know, there's all these different things happening. And so, you know, when people ask, you know, another common question people ask, I don't know if it's on there, but like, what's the number one thing that helps you have better sex? It's not necessarily learning skills. It's actually being able to more deeply feel your body. The more connected you are to sensations, the more access to pleasure you're going to have.
Right. Right. And how might you help someone through that? I'm curious.
Yeah. So the easiest way is just to create a mindfulness or meditation practice where you turn towards what I call your sensation body. So, you know, your body has so many routes of sensation, right? Like we think we can, you know, there's touch and smell and listening and what we're viewing. And one of the most important ones that I think, well, one of the most important ones, in my opinion, around eroticism is like what's actually happening with our skin in terms of touch, the giving touch and the receiving touch. And so can we let our bodies become more sensitive so that as our partner comes in and reaches for us, we can feel every aspect of that touch? And even if it's not necessarily a direct genital touch, like say it's just a touch on the arm, like can you really truly connect with the pleasure of that to let the pleasure in? And when two people start to really play in that space of connection with their sensations, their sensation body, and it, sometimes I also call it the subtle body, is like then you can really start to follow the nuances of pleasure and find your way into like, you know, ecstatic states. It's a little similar to, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of Tantra, but Tantra is a little bit similar in that. It's really using breath work, mindfulness. They don't call it that necessarily in the Tantra world, but this really slowing down and starting to pay attention to what's happening inside the body and on the skin and in, you know, in your field of your body. And that can be a huge place that can bring a lot of pleasure to people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually another question that came up is what is tantric sex? Is that how you would say it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of the ideas with tantric sex?
Yeah. So tantric or tantra, depending on sort of who you're talking to, is a religion out of India. And it's sort of been grabbed by, you know, Western culture and turned into this piece around eroticism and sexuality. So it's essentially really being in your body, connected to your partner, and exploring these, what are called energetic states. So really being in this energetic space with your partner or with yourself, where it's based in the energy of eroticism or the creativity of eroticism and what's sort of down in your lower chakras. But it doesn't necessarily have to involve sex, but it's all around, oftentimes in Western culture, around this idea. But I'm by no means an expert in Tantra. I know it with sweeping brush strokes. And when I have clients that are interested in Tantra, I normally will refer them out to somebody who specializes in that. And, you know, I think for people who are really energetically based and they have really sensitive nervous systems, and they often find themselves really wanting things to slow down and really wanting, you know, to take their time and wanting to spend these long hours of just sort of eye contact. And that's a really great arena for people to start to explore, for sure.
Yeah. And I'm wondering too, I find that more often women are the ones that want to slow down. Men want to go faster, maybe have intercourse more often. Do you find that to be the case too? And if so, what do you think that's about?
Women want to slow down. We just phrased the question again. Sorry.
I find that women tend to want to slow down more than men, and they want more foreplay in general. Mm-hmm. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah. I just actually wrote an article is saying, like, there's the three things women tell me they want over and over and over again. And the main one is like, I want my partner to slow down.
Right.
It's all moving too quickly.
Right.
And, you know, my experience of working with men for so long is that they get in this, again, this is a very, I'm grossly overgeneralizing about people. So if you don't relate with this, that's not a,
yeah,
know,
there's no that means caveat. Yeah. No big deal.
But you know, men sort of feel this, like, I think they feel a lot of pressure. From what I've gathered from the men I've worked with, like, they often feel a lot of pressure in sex of like, okay, I've got to be dominant. I've got to be masculine. My cock has got to get hard. I've got to perform. I've got to do this thing, and I've got to wow her, and she's got to like it, and she's got to orgasm, and maybe multiple orgasms. There's like this list that runs in their head and this pressure that they're under. And I think in that context of sort of trying to check all those things off that list and be this like amazing, passionate lover, they are hurrying because the fear of like, what if I don't get to all of those? What if I come too soon? What if I lose my erection? What if she loses interest? What if I'm not passionate enough? What if I think that there's oftentimes kind of this feeling underneath it all of like, I've got to really keep bringing new things and keep bringing myself, or I'm going to lose her somehow. And again, that's not all men, but I think that's pretty common. And I think what women start to feel, because women have their own version of pressure, but it's typically not around like, my cock has to get hard or I have to lead this experience. It oftentimes women in heterosexual dynamics feel a lot less pressure to like make something happen. Like, they're sort of more in it for the connection. And so, you know, I think if you're a person who's ever heard your partner say, slow down, one of the things I'll often tell my couples when that dynamic happens of like, I want you to practice for a day or even a week, depending on how quickly that person is moving. Like, everything that they do needs to be at, if 10 is their normal speed of doing things, everything needs to be at a speed from like a 2 to a 3. Mm. And even all their interactions with their partner, the way they start to reach out to touch, the way they go to turn the key on in their car, you know, all of just slowing everything down in their world and just seeing what it's like. You know, sometimes people just don't find pleasure in slowing down. Like, for them, there's pleasure in speeding through, or they're linking passion with quickness, which is another thing that can sometimes happen. Like, how do I show my passion or my masculinity if I'm not moving quickly? And that's more or less just sort of a teaching of like, okay, well, what does it look like to get to use your hands to hold your partner down and look her in the eye and not let her move, and to show your passion by just how you're being there? You know, versus like having to quickly move and rip clothes off and mixing it up, essentially, because nobody really wants to do the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about my experience just growing up, and it was really early on. I mean, 13 is when I found porn for the first time, and I only saw like one kind of sex over and over and over. And then my friends were like, yeah, that's what you got to do. And they reinforced it. And it wasn't until I was like in my mid 20s that I realized like, that's actually not how it works a lot of times. And that's actually not what women want a lot of times.
Yeah. I mean, porn is a really interesting dynamic that I think a lot of people, men and women now, are really, really falling into this sense of like, well, that's what is happens on porn. So it must be what we do in real life. And there's sort of a lost in translation part of like, this is a video, you know, meant to entertain you. It's not real life. But I think people really want to know, like, what does happen in real life? What are my expectations? What should I expect? You know, all of those different pieces. And so that's why I think it's so important that we all start to talk about sex, and we start to talk about, like, for men, sometimes you lose your erection during sex. It doesn't mean you have ED. Like, it doesn't mean you're not attracted to your partner. You know, it's like just sort of normalizing what does actual, you know, pleasurable erotic experiences look like. And, you know, taking the stigma off of the pressure to orgasm, you know, pressure to make your partner orgasm, all of these different pieces, I think is really important for us all to just be talking about and taking us, you know, I often use the phrase of like, let's get out of the box that society has put us in, and let's actually find what's pleasurable for your body today in this moment, versus this idea of like, I have to do this thing because I feel like that's what is expected of me.
Yeah, I like that. It just feels so relaxing as you say it, like what feels good for me or what feels good for us. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, what if people were just doing what felt good for them in those moments, you know, or good for the couple, you know? It's like, wow, people would probably be having a lot better sex, I imagine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And this brings up a listener question, which is, and they frame it, do you find that pornography is good, bad, or maybe some of both? And then what would, if so, if it is, if you do bring it into a relationship, what does a healthy relationship with porn look like?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really important question. And it's something that's getting asked more and more and more and more. And again, I mentioned this before, not just from men, but also from women. So if we go back to the balanced human sexuality model, I put the love and relationships on one side, and right next to that, obviously, that would make sense based on there's only three parts, but basically between the fantasy and the love and relationships is where porn lives. It's the opposite of the erotic embodiment, because you cannot be in your body with your eyes open and visually watching something that's so stimulating. I mean, you can, I guess, but it's much more difficult to bring your body along in that experience. It's, when our eyes are open, so much of what our brain is processing is this visual stimulation. And when it's really super exciting, like porn is, it's just a super highway to really exciting stuff, which is great. It can really disconnect you from your body. And so I don't believe that porn is bad. There's nothing, I think actually for a lot of people, it's a really, really great tool for them to learn about their sexuality, what turns them on, what interests them, what does these certain sex acts look like, how do bodies move? You know, I mean, there's a lot of questions that get answered with porn, as well as, you know, people can find in that fantasy category, which is why porn is in fantasy, they can find their way into fantasies that they didn't know they were turned on by. And sometimes that gets, you know, coined as this bad thing because people are learning things. But I think it's a great thing to know all about your sexuality. And, you know, our fantasies are outside the politically correct system. And, you know, as long as there's consenting adults, then I think that, you know, what it is that turns you on is less of a question of should I be turned on by that or not, versus, you know, how often do I need this in my life in terms of fantasy, and how do I need to engage with it? Meaning like, can I just be turned on by watching this or thinking about it? Or is it something I actually want to participate in my life before I die? And that's sort of a bigger conversation around fantasy, but you know, porn can really offer this access to turn-ons that people didn't know existed, or they may not have ever even found them in their whole life of scanning their brain and making creative fantasies in their brain. They may have never actually stumbled upon that fantasy. And so I think it's this like super highway to like, wow, that turns you on. That's great. And the question is, does it feel in balance with the rest of your sexuality? You know, if porn is the only place you go to when you masturbate, In my opinion, yes, that is a problem. If you're unable to make your own creative fantasies in your head without porn, I believe that is a problem.
Yeah, I love your answer there. Yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking, I hadn't thought about that I made a decision to stop watching porn because I wanted to work on just doing this within my own mind. But I can also see hearing you say that you can go to porn potentially as a way to explore some of your fantasies and, you know, and then bring that into your partnership. Mm-hmm. That is really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think my experience of people that watch porn too is like what they watch is very vulnerable and they feel very exposed when you ask them to tell them, you know, when I ask them like, what kind of porn do you watch? People feel very exposed with that question.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think when this idea of like, do I bring it into my couple, you know, is one, it's sort of like, you know, I think it has the potential to really be this like, wow, I want to show you this thing that I'm turned on by. Like it's this beautiful intimate share. It just is sometimes the way it can get phrased, you know, in society at large is like, oh, my partner's watching porn because I don't turn them on. And if that's true, that's probably something to look at. And if someone can only be turned on by porn, again, I perceive that as a problem and something that someone would really want to look at and maybe even do like what you have tried, which is not looking at any porn until that creative mm-hmm. part of your mind comes back on. I sometimes think of porn, like when I'm talking to clients about this, I'll say like, do you remember Paint by Numbers?
No.
Okay, so there used to be this thing. I'm sure it still exists if someone looks it up on Amazon. But there's these drawings, and in each little thing will be like a number, like 2A, and it's linked to like a color that you would paint on. And I think of porn as like paint by numbers. Like you don't have to do any of the work. You just like fill in the little areas, and then next thing you know, you have a picture that looks like something. Right. Where coming into an erotic experience and allowing yourself to create your own fantasies is more of a blank canvas. And that does take time to create. And even if people maybe had it earlier in their lives, but then started to use porn as the only way in which they explored creatively like that, they can lose that connection to being able to paint their own canvas the way that they want to or would be turned on by.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I'm just getting that visual. Yeah. Yeah. I have another question popping up. You open to a listener question?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, and this is an interesting one. What to do when you definitely want sex, just not with the one you're married to? And they write, I think this is different than lack of desire. It's specific to lack of desire with spouse.
We read that one. Reread that again.
Yeah, yeah. It is what to do when you definitely want sex, just not mm-hmm. with the one you're married to. So basically, okay. Yeah, you're not. I'm hearing like you're not. What I'm if not you're attracted. Not attracted to? Your
that's
spouse?
What I'm hearing too. Yeah. Yeah. And then the second part, because the second part, that's what I heard first. But then there was a second part of, like,
yeah. And I think it's just reaffirming the first, which is it's not a lack of desire. It's just a lack of desire with spouse.
Oh, okay. So it's a lack of attraction. Like I'm not feeling attracted to that person anymore.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
So again, this is one of those very complicated pieces to look at. And if the person who wrote in, I would really recommend like finding a therapist that you know is comfortable talking about sex and start to look at this piece. It may be, you know, the easy answer would be you're just not getting the type of sex you want. You're wanting X and your partner is wanting Y and you guys haven't, and there hasn't been a communication around how to get to pleasure. Another potential answer to that would be that there's some intimacy blocks that are happening within you. What's called a love lust split or like the Madonna whore split. It's difficult to love someone, to truly love them in your heart and also eroticize them and want to fuck their brains out. And so there's this split that happens. Like I either love you or I want to have sex with you and I can't meld the two. And so that would also be a really important place to bring in a professional to help you look at some of those, what are called attachment theory pieces of sort of like what actually happens in intimacy for you. And then the third one, which is, you know, sort of a piece that's in there too, is like, you may actually not be attracted to your partner anymore. And what does that mean? You know, nobody said just because you chose to marry this person that you were going to be attracted to them the rest of your life. And, you know, it's a question of, you know, are you interested in trying to find attraction again? You know, how, you know, what's happening in the couple? So that's a possibility too. Like, sometimes we choose people to be in relationships with, and 10 years later, we're no longer physically attracted to them. And so what does that mean?
Yeah. And that just sounds really difficult too. If someone's put on weight or something's happened, just imagine it being really, really tough if you're not feeling the same physical attraction or if they don't look the same.
And you know, the truth is though, sometimes it doesn't even have anything to do with anything happening. And I think that can be one of the saddest places, or, you know, it's like nothing in particular changed about that person other than your desire for them no longer exists. And it's a really interesting question, I think, for people to ask themselves when that happens.
I remember reading something, and it was statistics on sexless marriage or how often people have sex, which I want to ask you about too, but I was surprised at just how many respondents didn't have a regular sex life or had no sex life at all. It was it was pretty high. I think it was in like 15 or 20% who hadn't had sex in the last 6 months or something. Can you speak to that at all? What you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I obviously see a lot more people not having sex because of the nature of my work. But, you know, I think in general, a lot of people say that they're having more sex than they are. I think that's really common. And again, that's not to say everybody, but I would say most couples are happily engaging in sex, which doesn't necessarily mean penetration, intercourse, but some form of, you know, erotic closeness and intimacy that they feel is, you know, fulfilling for them, anywhere between 1 to 3 times a week. And it really depends a lot. So the biggest, I'm in the Bay Area, and a lot of people are workaholics. I mean, they are leaving for work, you know, sometimes 6:45 in the morning and not getting home until 9 o'clock, and then literally not even seeing their partners. And they're exhausted by the time they get home, staring at screens all day or in meetings and going, and they just crash right when they get home. And so, you know, in San Francisco, there's this piece of like, when is there even time to see your partner and to create space for that? And also, there's a ton of stress that a lot of people, you know, specifically in the Bay Area are under. Like, they just feel these constant deadlines in the startup world where you're doing 3 jobs at once. And a lot, you know, 95% of people do not feel sexy when they're stressed out. There's a 5%. I am one of those. If I am under stress, like, there's no way. It's so difficult to get there. Just to get to the place where I would even want to turn towards eroticism. And there is a 5% of people who are like, I'm stressed out or not, no big deal. Like, let's do this. I'm ready. Like, I love you. I love my body. I got a lot of, you know, and I think it's important to communicate with your partner if you're one of those people that is, you know, like myself, where stress makes it more difficult to want to feel sexual or erotic, to be able to name those moments of like, wow, you know, I'm feeling really stressed out this week, or I'm imagining the next 2 weeks with this deadline, I'm going to be really stressed out. Like, I'm aware that you're going to want to be close erotically, and I'm aware that it's probably going to be difficult to me. Like, what could we do over the next 2 weeks? Like, does it mean that one person takes over more chores at home? Does it mean that you plan a date night that's all about relaxation? Or does it mean you just sort of agree, like, okay, the next 2 weeks, like, I'm not going to pressure you. You know, there's all sorts of different ways to navigate around, and it sort of just depends on what's happening with the couple. But this idea of that there's any sort of normal frequency too, I think is maybe a little bit more of like a fantasy of like, that people are normally having sex on Tuesdays and Sundays, and that's the day that they're always doing it. I'm sure there are people out there that do have that sort of system going, but I think most of the couples that I work with just simply don't, because the way their work-life balance is.
Yeah, and I'm hearing that logistics really matters, because there's couples that we work with where if you have four kids, do have to put in a lot of forethought and be really mindful about when are you going to have sex, because if you're just hoping to do it at the end of the day, it's might not happen.
No, it's not going to happen. And you often don't feel sexy depending on the age of those kids. It's like, you do not feel sexy if someone like threw up on you, or, I mean, who knows what the day looked like. But it, again, if you're sort of moving through, you know, raising kids is super hard. I watch a lot of my friends do it and they're not connected to their body in this erotic embodiment sensation way. Right. Like, and they're definitely not connecting with any fantasies. Like they're, you know, in kid mode. And so there's this separation of this deeper connection to eroticism. And I think oftentimes it's stepping back into that first. And then, you know, there was I can't remember the name of the therapist who created this or said this first, but I think it's really great. She said, you know, when you first start dating someone, you schedule dates, which was scheduling sex. Like you called on Wednesday and asked if someone was available on Saturday, and you planned a date, and like, you know, sex happened often on those dates, right?
Yeah.
But then you get married and you start a family, or you move in with people, and you sort of expect that sex will just, like, you know, naturally, it's the word people often say, naturally happen. And it's like, but it never naturally happened. You never just naturally bumped into that person on the street and found your way to having sex. Like there was a schedule and an anticipation around that date that allows for that eroticism to build.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it like that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
I hadn't either, but I was like, yes, the first time I heard that, I was like, oh, yeah, obviously.
And this is a tangent. I'm wondering about advice on talking to kids about sex, because I didn't get hardly any guidance. I was just basically told how it works and then figured it out on my own. But do you do any work with kids, or do you work with parents?
I am by no means an expert on when to or how to talk to children. Although I just got a message from my sister last night that her 7-year-old daughter was asking about making babies. And she was so proud of herself the way she talked about it. And she's like, I'm just curious, you think that was good? You know, so it is a really important thing, you know, to not just pretend like sexuality doesn't exist. And I think the most important thing to remember, that the little bit of reading I've done on it, is that children oftentimes need a lot less of an answer than you think. So the important thing is, like, answer their questions directly, but age appropriately, with clear, you know, clear words like, you know, penis, vagina. Like, you want to start to use proper anatomy, not just saying like your hoo-ha or your no-no space.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's like using proper anatomy. And I have worked with a couple of people who've said that they were, you know, their child was starting to ask about sex, and they realized that it was really hard for them to talk about it. And so they wanted to work on their sexuality so that they didn't pass along this discomfort with sexuality to their kids. And I thought that was really, really cool and super smart, because you can pass it along. I mean, that's a big piece of that I'm working with clients on, is sort of like what was passed along from their family or from society to them about sex that they're sort of shedding. So I think this question is huge and super, super important. And so the most important pieces are like using, you know, making sure that you are, you know, as comfortable as one can get discussing this, you know, because obviously most people are not going to be an expert or super, super comfortable, but to answer honestly, clearly, and somewhat short based on the age appropriateness, using proper terminology. And at the end of your response, to just ask your kid, you know, do you have any more questions? And typically, from what I understand about this, is a lot of times the kids will just say no, like, that was good. Like, but one of the things that they say is like, don't just keep going, like, answer the question and then stop and ask if they need more information.
I'm remembering just one of my first sex talks, and I remember being really freaked out actually by it. And I just didn't, you know, and being in the bathtub or seeing my sister naked, and it was just like, oh my gosh, like, this just seems so scary and weird to even know.
Your parents kind of went on and on.
Well, no, they just told me a little bit about what happens. The penis goes in the vagina is all I think. And then I remember just looking at girls differently from then on. This is maybe at 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And but I mean, that stayed with me until like high school. And then when I became sexually active, it was just, but yeah, I can tell it's just a taboo thing. And I'm thinking about, you know, I have a lot of compassion for my parents because their parents grew up in a time where it was super traditional. No one talked about it probably at all. They didn't get a lesson. So we're kind of maybe some of the first generations to start to talk about this more.
And that brings up the last piece, which is that, you know, it is scary for children. Like that sounds painful for them. Like they don't understand pleasure. And so I think one of the important things to say is actually, you know, like when they might ask, like, why do they do it? And that's that piece around pleasure, right? Like people have sex because it feels good, you know? And I think that's the big piece that goes missing. And that's the part then that people often get hooked up on, right? Like as an adult, why are we doing this? Right.
Yeah. So we have about 10 minutes left. And I want to get to just a few more questions.
Okay. I'll try and be short.
Oh yeah. No worries. We don't have like a hard stop, but,
okay.
Where was it? So this one, even though you don't know a ton about Mormonism, I think you'll still understand this question. We live in Utah, so we work with quite a few people that are in either mixed faith marriages or they've left Mormonism or they're still in Mormonism. So the question goes, would love some tips about navigating sexuality post-Mormonism. My husband and I are realizing we both have a lot of guilt and shame around our sexuality and would love some help developing ourselves as sexual beings when sex was always regarded as evil our whole lives.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think if this person isn't already in therapy, you know, starting to work with someone that, you know, is a pleasure-based, you know, non-shaming sex therapist or sex coach would be super, super important. And, you know, I believe when I was researching at some point some referrals up in that area, the Salt Lake City, I believe there are still some people who are sex therapists, but still in the Mormon community. And so I don't know what type of information is being shared because I just don't know enough about Mormonism, but it feels really, really important that you would find professional help of someone that is going to be from this pleasure-based stance of what feels good for you. How can we start to help you find your pleasure? And how can we start to process some of the shame and, you know, false beliefs that were thrust upon you without you even knowing? Because that's the difficult thing, especially if you grow up in a community like that, is like, it's just, you just believe it's true because that's all you've ever known for so long. And being able to process that shame and, you know, have a professional sort of walk you through that, I think is really, really important. And in terms of like what to do if you didn't want to seek help, would mostly just be sort of like reading books, finding different bloggers or websites of people who feel like can help educate. I think education is just a big component there of like, you know, there's no normal, but you know, what could be expected, you know, what are different things that, you know, different positions to try or different things that add to pleasure. You know, like a lot of people just don't know about lubricant, you know, and the importance of that during vaginal penis penetration of how, you know, that you need lubricant in order for it to feel pleasurable. You know, those sorts of things. And so it sort of really depends kind of like, you know, what education level they're at and sort of where their information would be in terms of a book. Like as you were asking that question, I was racking my head of like, what would be a good book to start with?
Right. Yeah. And I'm also hearing too, and I'm agreeing that it might take a lot of help and you might need a professional to unravel years or a lifetime worth of shame and stories.
Totally.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but it's worth it ultimately.
Yeah, totally. For sure. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's really helpful. Next question. Do men typically have a higher libido than women?
No.
Okay.
No. That is
break that myth for me.
Yeah, let's just tear that one down. Men and women have a sexual desire and libido, and there's no gender that necessarily has one that's higher than another. It's just more what's happening in your couple. So this person in particular may have on average a very high libido. But there's plenty of women that could, I'm sure, match them. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I'm wondering too, cause I've worked with, this idea and I'm not remembering where it came from, but it's that a lot of times women require more emotional safety prior to sex, versus men's can sometimes just jump into it without feeling emotionally safe. Do you find that to be true?
So one of the other, when I think about the way relationships function, I think of three overlapping circles, and one is, commitment, one is emotional intimacy, and the other is physical intimacy. And this is sort of the modern westernized relationship. Like if people have all three of these things, commitment, emotional intimacy, and physical intimacy, then they feel good in their couple. Mm-hmm. And I think that women have been categorized as needing this emotional intimacy and commitment before they're ready for physical intimacy. It's not necessarily true. Everybody is different. I know actually I have plenty of men that actually need the emotional intimacy before physical intimacy. Mm. And so I think it's more around sort of each individual person understanding what it is that feels good for them and being able to get that. Now, if we're talking about like day to day, there is a partnership where, somebody in the partnership, male or female, wants to have a really heartfelt, that, that loving, emotional connection, that may just be a genuine part of their actual turn on. Like they feel turned on when they feel really seen. They feel turned on when they feel really connected to. And I don't know that that's necessarily gendered as much as it is like what turns you on, what gets you hot, essentially.
Right. Right. And I'm thinking about myself, even as right as I asked that question. And it's like, I think I have a story that I don't need as much emotional safety, but I certainly have felt the difference. And I've definitely been in situations where I didn't really want to have sex, but I did anyways. Yes. And then as a man, it's like, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. Like if it's exactly. there, like mm-hmm. I'm supposed to want it. Yeah. Totally. And it's been really interesting too, as we've been trying for a baby where we've had to go into, nights or days when like I really didn't feel like it. And then I have to like push myself into to doing it, and we have to really do a lot of warming up. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, we've also experimented with saying no to each other when we're not feeling it. And we have an agreement where like we're not going to be sexual unless we both really want to. And I just assumed that I always wanted to, but I'm finding sometimes, I'm a little tired or like, I would rather just have a head scratch tonight or,
totally.
So it's super interesting to get in touch with some of my sensitivities here.
That's great. Well, and I'll also add to like the baseline of anybody wanting to have sex is safety. Like if someone does not feel safe, they are not going to be able to feel, their eroticism. It won't build. Like safety has to be there first, comfort and safety. And then eroticism builds off of that. So if that doesn't exist in a couple, it's going to be very difficult to find that, that erotic space.
Gotcha. Okay. And I saved the biggest question for last, maybe the hardest, we'll see. How do you create desire? Like if your partner, you're not feeling like they desire you, how does one create desire? Mm. How can you help your that partner desire you more?
You know, I think sitting down and having an honest conversation is really important. You know, I think saying, is there anything I've ever done or do that feels sexy to you or draws you closer or makes you want me? Is there something I could try? Can we start to dialogue around this? And can you let me try things? Like, could you be open to experiments? And getting curious about what desire means. You know, that looks different for everybody. Passion, desire, erotic arousal, all of these things, attraction, those all look different. And what everyone's looking for out of those moments is different. And so I think there's no way through this. There's no magic button. There's no, like, I have one, you know, trick that will save everything. I wish I did. I'd be, you know, revered as a god, I'm sure. But, you know, it really comes down to starting to dialogue and starting to figure out, like, what's not happening in this relationship that needs to be fleshed out. And oftentimes that's a really difficult conversation.
Leaning into the difficult conversation here. And I'm also wondering, tell me what you think about this, is because I notice when Jenny is feeling alive and she's feeling joy and she's feeling bright, and I just see her just in her zone, I just feel attracted to her. It's not always sexual either, but I just, so I'm wondering if self-care plays into this too. Like, if someone's really taking care of themselves, that's going to create attraction.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, for sure. One of the big pieces that you'll hear is, you know, when I've had these conversations with couples, is someone will say, well, I'm not attracted to you because you're just not happy anymore. You're always so negative. You don't take care of yourself. You're not really exercising anymore. Right.
Totally.
There's this, the person often in the couple knows that that's happening and will reflect it. And, you know, one of the most revered sex therapists out there is, my gosh, I'm blanking on her name right now. She's in New York, State of Affairs. She just wrote, oh my gosh, I can't remember. Esther Perel. So yeah. Esther.
Oh, love her.
Yeah, she's great. And she wrote a whole book about this sort of, like, individuality, being yourself, you know, doing your own thing. And she does say that sort of, like, your partner, you're going to be the most attracted to your partner, and they're going to be most attracted to you when you're really in this, like, element of your own experience. And I think that's a super, super important part. And it's not always the answer to everything.
Nice.
So it's really important to not just guess. Like, if you're sitting here, you know, listening, and you're thinking, like, okay, well, if I just start to do my own thing and my partner is going to recognize me, it may be a huge letdown because that may not be what your partner is looking for.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Which leads back to the difficult conversations and the staying curious, maybe staying a little mysterious too.
But it's great that you know that, so that if there's ever a part, you know, in your, you know, happening in your world where you can say, like, oh, I just love it. It's so sexy when you're just doing your thing and you're out there and I can see you and you're just so confident, right? That you know that that is something that attracts you. It's great that you have that.
Yeah. 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 Her smile, I'm just like, love it. She does this thing. She'll, like, laugh and, like, open her mouth real wide, just like kind of big belly laugh.
That's great.
I instantly smile back. So I love that.
Yeah. And I think that's also a really important thing. If you haven't communicated that with her, if she's going to listen to this, like, really let her know when that happens, right? Let those moments feed your relationship. Like, wow, I'm so attracted to you right now. Like, I just feel super lit up. Like, I just want to rip your clothes off, or I just want to grab you and kiss you, or, you know, to let that be a real experience in your body that brings that attraction towards her.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I can see how that even could be vulnerable too.
Totally.
To show appreciation. Yeah.
Hugely.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm just taking a deep breath here as we're winding down. Been so exciting talking to you.
Yeah. It's really been great.
I've had a really good time. I'm sweating a little bit, you know, there's some intensity here, but I also like that. Yeah. So great. Keely, I'm curious, where can people find you? What are you offering, and who do you work with? And you can answer that however you want.
Yeah. So people can find me on my website, which is my first name and my last name. So KeelyRankin.com, KeelyRankin.
Okay. And we'll put links in the description too, just so people have it.
Yeah. I have a very unique name. Yeah. You can also just type in Keely Rankin Sex Therapist San Francisco and I pop up there. Or just Sex Therapist San Francisco, I should pop up there too. And so I mainly work with men, women, and couples that are looking to better understand themselves erotically and sexually, and sort of exploring these different pieces of places where they may be stuck. And on my site currently, the only course that I have up for offer is around early ejaculation. So it's a 12-module course designed for men to overcome their struggles with not being able to last as long as they want in bed. And we'll have many more courses to come, but currently right now, that's the only one we have up.
Well, awesome. And it's just you, or do you work with anyone else?
It's just me.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. If you're interested in that, go check Keely out. She's awesome, as you can tell by this interview. Hope you're feeling really served here. If you like what we're doing, please write us a review on Apple Podcast or wherever you found us. Give us a like, and you're welcome to join our free Facebook group, the Advanced Relationship Podcast group on Facebook. Just put it into the search bar, and we look forward to talking with you guys again next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.